You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 13th of December. Is it really just as simple as passing the basketball? We'll look at that and points gained and where the Jazz sit, why it'll be a quiet trade deadline, according to John Hollinger. That's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, lots of geeky numbers today. Hope you're having a really nice week. Survive the snowstorms that are coming in or take advantage of them in the mountains. I was at a nice event last night, and they said at this event, embarrassingly, and told people to download and listen to Locked On Jazz. So if you're one of the new people listening, welcome, and welcome to a basketball geek fest. Apologize for no show yesterday. I think you probably get it. We just got turned around travel-wise. I'm trying to make a concerted effort to get sleep this year to stay healthy. And so it was kind of a choice of whether I was going to sleep 4 hours or five and a half, and I went with five and a half. And so I apologize that that did not happen. That's a little bit also of what's gone on with Empty the Noggin. There's a few other reasons for that as well, but put that on the back burner for the time being this year. Okay, so the Jazz go blow out Minnesota. Really play well, shoot the crap out of it again. I could probably stop right there, frankly. We have had two of our best offensive games in the last three nights, which is a really good sign. And in both of them, we've just shot it brilliantly. Maybe the better sign in both those games, actually, is that we had a 28% offensive rebounding rate against Memphis and Minnesota. That, to me, might actually be the number that matters the most, because the most disconcerting thing to me about what has happened with us offensively this year has been that we were in the bottom 10 in both turnover rate and offensive rebounding rate. And if you go back over back to 15-16, so that gives you 15-16, 16-17, 17-18, 18-19, and 19-20. So counting this year, the last 5 years, there have been 13 teams in the NBA that have been either bottom 10 in both, bottom 5 in one, bottom 10 in the other, or bottom 5 in both. And of those 13 teams, only one of them has ever been an above-average offensive team. And that was the 17-18 Golden State Warriors, who shot it like no team has ever shot it before. But the three teams that have been just bottom 10 in both over the last few years were 26th, 18th, and 22nd offensively. The five teams that were bottom 5 in one and bottom 10 in the other were 27th, 29th, 2nd, Golden State, 16th, us 2 years ago, and Atlanta 22nd in 15-16. And if you're bottom 5 in both, 23rd, 28th, 21st, 30th, and 30th offensively. So the burden that we've been put on our team every night to shoot it at just an incredible rate is such that it's hard for us to be good offensively. And in the last two nights, or two of the last three games, we've suddenly had a really good offensive rebounding rate. We've only had an offensive rebounding rate equal to that in the win over Philadelphia, in the loss to Toronto, in the Memphis game, in the Minnesota game. So those are the four times this year where we've garnered 28% or more of our offensive rebounds. We're 3-1 in those games. And it really, it's a big deal. You can kind of get away with not being great at one of the two areas of the four factors, or there's always seems to be the four factors, which are shooting, free throw rate, offensive rebounding, and turnovers, that every team kind of has one area where they're not very good. If you're not very good at two, it gets awfully hard. And so we have begun to show some signs of offensive rebounding, which is nice because, as I said, I don't think we could survive otherwise. So one thing is we shot it, right? We went 19 of 34 against Memphis. We went 16 of 35 against Minnesota. So the nice one is we had 35 three attempts, which we could pick up a little bit, but it's not bad. We've been over 30 pretty consistently, other than the Philadelphia game. And we shot it, and we added offensive rebounding, and so then we're really terrific offensively. So we've had two of our three best offensive games of the year recently. What I actually think drives the offensive rebounding is passing. What? How does passing drive offensive rebounding? Well, against Minnesota, the Utah Jazz, who have not thrown a great deal of passes this year. So let me back up with that. The Utah Jazz this year were throwing about 286 passes a game. I think recently it's up to about 290. That's down from 314 the year before, 334 the year before that, 350 the year before that, and 395 years ago. So that was probably overkill. We didn't have a lot of one-on-one players. Gordon hadn't developed yet. But we threw 390 passes. We're now throwing 290 passes. In 5 years, we've lost 100 passes. And we did it a little bit. If you start to play faster, you lose passes, right? And frankly, if you can throw one pass and get on the rim, you'd rather have that. So it's a little bit of a funky number. I'm not sure that I really believe in passing as a way to evaluate a team. But it's worth noting that against Minnesota, we threw 340 passes. It's pretty good. Well, I don't know if it's pretty good. It's a lot, right? That's kind of my point. So we had 24 kickouts. We had 35 handoffs, which is something Ron Boone's talked about. We felt like we got out of the handoff game. We threw 340 passes. Oklahoma City got into our body, restricted our movement, physically kicked the crap out of us. We reverted back to 288 passes, had 25 handoffs in that game, compared to Minnesota, where we had 35 handoffs. It's a big jump, 25 to 35. But Oklahoma City was into our bodies. So we didn't fight through it. We got soft, and we threw 289 passes. Back up a game, and you go to Memphis, we threw 320 passes, and we had 30 handoffs. It's kind of so there's our three-game sample size, so we might as well go take a second and look and see whether or not there's something going on here. Because it feels as though, just looking at that, all we got to do is throw more passes. I think passes are actually symbolic of whether or not the defense is allowing us to do things or not. Oklahoma City, in our first matchup of the year, in our first game of the year, we only threw 230 passes the entire game. That actually might be the number we should remember for the entire year. Because that's the number that when our team came out, on its first game out, and everyone did what they're naturally comfortable with, we threw 230 passes. Oh my gosh, were we selfish on opening night, and we got away with it. So let's look and see if there's any correlation and if there's any trend going on. They also have a stat called passes leading to shots. And interestingly, against Minnesota, all season long, that's been our high. In the two games back-to-back against Minnesota, we had 93 passes leading to shots and 91 passes leading to shots, which are two highest numbers of the year, which might be a statement, not that we changed anything offensively, that it's Minnesota. So we'll look at that here in just a moment, and points gained today as well. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. The Murdochs have been in Utah for over 80 years. The Hyundai brand gives you more bells, whistles, technological advancements and safety features than just about anyone out there. In fact, the way the automotive world works, I didn't really know this, is that if someone comes out with a safety feature that's ahead of the game, they get it for a certain period of time, and then the rest of the industry has the right to add it after that. That's how, I guess, the auto industry patents and things work, I think. Kind of stretch that a little bit more than I know. One of those is the backdoor safety feature. It's a symbolic of kind of what Hyundai does. So if your kid's in the backseat of the car and you're on a side street and they open it up eager to go to their ice cream store, if there's a car coming, that door will not open. That's the kind of safety features that Hyundai puts in to make sure that everyone involved is safe. Stop by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. The Palisade is the new 8-seater. Then there's the Santa Fe, which I drove in the snow last night. It was just terrific. Got home. Santa Fe, you did it well. We'll talk about you tomorrow, I said. The Tucson and the Kona. Yeah, I think it listens. And also the new Elantra is just fabulous as well. Those are all at Murdoch Hyundai. The Kona is the fun zippy if you're looking for a fun small SUV, inexpensive, zip around during the winter months. And if you're heading over to Murdoch Hyundai, make sure you email me first at dlock09@gmail.com. That's dlock09@gmail.com. And tell me you're coming. We'll set you up with Jason over in Murray, or we'll set you up with whoever we should in Linden and Logan for you. That's Murdoch Hyundai. So the games this year where the Jazz have thrown the most passes are good to see. The Warriors game in November, we threw 353. Okay, their defense is probably not good. Minnesota, last game, we threw 340. It was our second highest, a win. Milwaukee on November 25th, that's the game at Milwaukee. We lose, but our offense is quite good. There's really somewhat of a correlation here. In fact, I can pull out our, why don't we just do the direct correlation? So Golden State on 11-11 was our third best offensive night of the year. Minnesota was our best offensive night of the year. Milwaukee on the 25th was our fifth best offensive night of the year. Memphis on December 7th is our fourth most amount of passes. That's our second best. Okay, is it just as simple as passing the ball? Yeah, probably not being a selfish pig helps. Starts to fall apart a little bit because Utah-Indiana, which was our 15th best offensive night, not terrible, but not a good offensive night, was our fifth amount of passes. Ironically enough, the night after we were just complete, two nights after we were just completely selfish in our opening night of the or a year against Oklahoma City, we go to Sacramento and we actually move the basketball. But we have our eighth best offensive night of the year. Toronto, we in the blowout, we moved the basketball probably because we moved it in the second half. And it actually turns out to be our 13th offensive game of the best game of the year. It's pretty incredible here, isn't it? Memphis, our eighth most amount of passes, is our 14th best offensive game. Memphis, our ninth most amount of passes, is our fifth best offensive game. Is that right? Yeah, is our 14th best offensive game. No. That's Memphis on the 15th. It's our 17th offensive game. And then we threw a lot of passes against Milwaukee. So there's two things that are going on here, and that's our win over Milwaukee, which was 18th. So in our games where we throw, you know, over 320 passes, which is kind of, I'll give you league average in a second because I think that's a relevant number. Our Golden State on the 11th of November, we are the third best offense. Minnesota the other night, that's our first best offense. Milwaukee in Milwaukee in a loss was our fifth best offense. And Memphis the other night on December 7th was our second best offense. All right, so there's definitely on the top of this, those are nights we've thrown over 318 passes. That's, that seems like the team that throws the most passes per game. Well, the Warriors have thrown, it's an interesting number, right? What does it actually mean? The Warriors, who did not always pass the ball, have thrown the most passes per game this year. Let's go to per 100 possessions. Seems like a better number than per game. Passes per 100 possessions. The Warriors are number, I take it back. The better number is per game because that's what we were just looking at. So that would be apples to apples. The Warriors throw the most passes at 344. The Pelicans are next at 325. Now the Warriors probably throw a lot of passes because they were middle of the pack at 293 now. Okay, but when we throw 315 or more, which would put us at like sixth or seventh in the league, we can see there's a noticeable change. So is it just that simple? We got to throw passes. It's pretty telling. I'm a numbers guy. If I coached a team, my players would be sick of it, but I would put that on the board. You're just trying to convince them it actually works. Here's the one that's not great right now. We've shot the crap out of it to get two wins against Memphis and Minnesota, and it does feel as though our opponent is dictating whether we pass the ball or not. Our defense has still not been very good recently. In fact, it's been bad. We won easily, so their defense doesn't quite get there, but Minnesota was our 22nd defensive performance of the year. Oklahoma City was our 11th. Memphis was our 20th. Lakers was our 24th. Philly, we were good because Philly's not very good offensively, 7th. In Toronto, we were 25th. Memphis was 9th, and then Indiana and Milwaukee was 21st and 23rd. So since Gobert sat out with the ankle injury, our defense has not been very good. That's not great. Because the question coming in was whether or not we'd be that good a defensive team. And, you know, I don't think that teams figured us out. I think that maybe we lost some focus. Actually, I had an interesting thought given to me that sounds funky, but actually when they said it rung so much true. These guys are so focused right now on trying to figure out the offensive end that the defense has slipped. That actually has some vibe to me. But we're 22nd defensively since the Milwaukee game. And Rudy comes back on the 27th. And we have not been together in that stretch. We've not played very well. We've been a bit discombobulated. Our transition defense has been terrible. We're 20th defensively in that stretch. So that's not great. But really, our transition defense has been absolutely horrendous in that stretch. Since November 27th, I think it's kind of incredible. Since November 27th, we're 29th in the league, allowing 18 fast break points a game. Come on. That's just togetherness, playing as one, being connected, working on. Prior to that, we were the fourth best defensive team in the league at 12 transition points a game allowed, fast break. I don't like fast break points, but that still tells a pretty good story. So we've got to be better in that regard. Emmanuel Mudiay, I think, deserves a shout out. Like, you know, he might not be a great player. I don't know that we know that yet. He's a top 10 pick, and I feel like, oh, he's playing right, and then everyone kind of expects him to become an all-star. That's what I mean by he might not be a great player. His effort to play the right way the last few games has been exceptional. And you actually can just see it in his minutes played. Played 22 minutes against Memphis and 22 minutes against Minnesota, and then Oklahoma City. Actually, Oklahoma City played 17 minutes. I didn't think he was terrible against the bench was not very good. I did not think he didn't make shots. There's a difference between Memphis, I just thought we made shots. Minnesota, I thought we looked better. Now, this might be because of Minnesota. They're not particularly connected, and they've lost 7 straight, and there's a lot of things. But just if you look at Mudiay in the Memphis game, 7 assists, 3 rebounds. Oklahoma City wasn't as good statistically, but it just felt like he actually played it right. He went to the free throw line. Like in the 5 previous games before this stretch, he had not taken a free throw. In 9 of his previous 11 games, he hadn't taken a free throw. In the 11 games prior to this, he had literally taken 4 free throws in something in the range of 150 minutes on the floor. Like, and I'm not saying be overly aggressive. I'm just, like, at least be, and he had 1.6 assists in that stretch per game. And he's had 10 assists in the last 3 games. He's had 10 rebounds in the last 3 games. you can just, there's a presence to it. And frankly, he's committed like 10 fouls. Just is that a presence? I just think he's actually played really well. I just thought we'd give him a shout out. There's been so much negative talk about the bench. He's really does seem as though he's trying to get things done in the correct manner. All right, let's do points gained. Oh, John Hollinger trade deadline and then points gained as we continue. Sarah at Sunprint Solutions could help our friends at Intercap Lending, but Intercap Lending is who I want to talk about. Hey, you know what? Shout out to Sarah at Sunprint Solutions. How are you, Sarah? Hope everything's going well. Hope you're having great holidays. Hope our ads are getting you business. Love it when we can help a company in Utah. One of those companies that we actually have helped that I feel like really proud of what we've done is for Intercap Lending. I think they have grown on their own and done amazing things on their own. But in the time, Steve Carter over at Intercap Lending has been our personal lender for all Locked On people. They have grown tremendously. They've grown tremendously because Josh Romney has built a company, and Brock Worthen, their CEO is incredible, and they've done, you know, they've done neat things. And so they have now have 15 branches from St. George to Logan to Twill to Vernal. I'm very embarrassed right now because I made it sound like I was taking credit for them, and I'm trying not to. I'm trying to backtrack right now. You can hear me going beep, 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 beep. So anyway, they have branches in Boise and Las Vegas and Phoenix. Steve Carter is our personal lender. And I love it when I see this. Here comes an email from Corey Sumpson. Looks good to me. I'm glad you advertised on Lockdown Jazz. You have been great to work with and made it easy to understand. I love that. Tom Ferguson. Heard about Intercap on a podcast, so I gave them a try. We went to refinance. Our situation was a little more complicated because we are a small business owner. Steve Carter was amazing to work with. Always super polite. Extra communicative to let me know exactly what's going on. Would certainly recommend him. John J.R., 3 weeks ago. Intercap Lending was amazing. Steve Carter was our loan officer that helped us purchase our home. He far exceeded expectations. Our realtor was a disaster. Steve stepped in and helped facilitate negotiations that helped us close on our new home. They were able to beat all competitors' rates, did an amazing job the entire process. If you're thinking of using them, stop looking elsewhere. You have found the best. Steve Carter is your personal loan officer at Intercap Lending. You tell him that you are with Locked On Jazz, you get the corporate discount as well. Call Steve. His direct line is 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Steve Carter in Intercap Lending, 385-885-28. John Hollinger, who does Hollinger and Duncan, they did a big podcast on trades this week. He was also on the Low Post, but listen to him on Hollinger and Duncan. They've had a monster week, by the way. Actually, the biggest show ever in the history of the Locked On Podcast Network this week with their listen numbers. We had the biggest week we've ever had, like 2 weeks ago. It's kind of cool. So they did a show called Who Should Be Traded. Massive show. John's got an interesting take on some of this. He thinks it's going to be just a very limited trade deadline. I think he's right, and I've talked about this a little bit. And that is the one that's going to, I think, limit the trade the most is there's just no free agency to be had. Since there's no free agency to be had, I just think it's going to, in the sense that there's no real reason why anyone's going to be clearing their books. Like, you're not going to take, you're not doing that salary cap deal for this year because there's no one out there you're trying to go get. The same way as there was just, you knew if you did things last year, you were fine. And so that eliminates one of the main ways deals get done. The other one John pointed out was that the bad deals are all gone. Like from that 2-3 summers ago when everybody went bananas, those are actually all kind of gone now. So no one's trying to get off of those. So interesting kind of way to look at this. And so, you know, if you're trying, you might find deals that work, and it just means it's going to be a little bit harder to find deals that work than it would be others. All right, let's take a look at points gained. For those who are new at points gained, it's our offensive metric we use on Locked On Jazz. By the way, some of the points gained preseason predictions have turned out all right. Scott Rogers, our graphics for the Jazz broadcast, pointed that out the other day. We had Phoenix, Oklahoma City battling for 8-9 in the playoffs, which kind of nobody else did. We also you know, missed on the Jazz offense really badly. So we had Jazz offense as number two in the NBA. We had the Lakers offense as killing people. We had Milwaukee dominantly better than anyone else in the East. That's turned out to be true. So there's been some interesting things. All right, here's what we got. Points gained takes the individual player and based on their scoring opportunities on a given night, how many more points do they score than a collection of average players in the NBA? Usually we have three players above three and then about 10 players above two. That's kind of how the league plays out as the year goes on. We're getting there. Harden is number one by a large margin, 4.6. In fact, the MVP conversation, if this doesn't change, should actually be over. I know everyone's talking about Giannis again. James Harden's 4.6 offensively is such a dominating force to what everybody else in the league is doing, particularly when you consider who he's playing with. It's amazing. He's going to the free throw line 17% of his possessions as well. Karl Anthony Towns, who just looks so mundane against us because Gobert knocks him out of his game, is second at 3.7. Giannis is third at 2.9. Luka is fourth at 2.8. So, frankly, the MVP conversation should be those three players: Harden, Giannis, and Luka. Rudy's fifth still. So for all of Rudy's complaining about, I need the ball more and I want the ball more, that he did once publicly, so maybe not all that complaining, he's still the fifth most impactful offensive player. He's at 2.7. He's getting 11 scoring opportunities a game. I wonder what he had last year, scoring opportunities a game. He's not getting as many lobs. Joe's obviously done a nice job of trying to find him here recently. Last year, Rudy had 11.6 scoring opportunities a game. This year, he has 10.7. Okay, so the league adjusted to the guy who set the record for most dunks. Devin Booker's been great. He is, and on a different level with Ricky Rubio and different teammates, he is sixth. Davis Bertans is seventh. Rashawn Holmes is eighth. Value of a dunker. Dame Lillard, despite the team not playing well, is ninth. Amazingly, Brandon Clark in Memphis is 10th. Jared Allen in Brooklyn is 11th. Duncan Robinson taking 75% of his possessions as threes. That's all he does is shoot threes in Miami. Started his career at the small liberal arts college in Williamston, Massachusetts, called Williams. Number one liberal arts college in the country, and he is now an NBA player, ended up at Michigan. 2.2, Aaron Baines, 2.1, that's why getting him back matters. Mo Wagner has been tremendous in Milwaukee, in Washington. He's an interesting mix of shooting the three as well as some high-volume stuff. Gordon Hayward, Hassan Whiteside, and then good old George Hill is 2.0. Those are the guys that are 2.0. Players that might be playing a little better than you might realize, that like if someone's talking about it, you're like, what? Christian Wood in Detroit has got a very good rating. Danilo Gallinari offensively has been quite good. Dwight Powell in Dallas is a 1.7. I'm just kind of scanning through those players here that are 1 point or better. PJ Tucker and Bojan Bogdanovic are both 1.4. Pretty good. Dwight Howard's a 1.3. Big value. Kita Bates Diop in Minnesota is a 1.1. Seems to really be coming into his own. He's only played 12 games, though. Kemba's a 1.1 as a point guard. It's pretty darn good. Luke Kennard in Detroit seems to have come into his own. He's a 1.0. All right, who are the bottom points gained players in the NBA? Oh, Russell, it's so good to hear your name. Let's see who we got. Marvin Bagley's back. He was terrible before the injury in one game. We'll see what he does next ones. Jordan Poole, we'll see tonight for Golden State, is minus 3.8. Eric Gordon's only played 9 games, minus 3.5. Justice Winslow's only played minus 10 games. He's minus 3.1. Now it's time for the rookies. RJ Barrett, minus 3. Dwayne Bacon, minus 3. Russell Westbrook, minus 2.6. Cam Reddish, minus 2.5. Jarrett Culver, minus 2.5. Dennis Smith, minus 2.4. And I mentioned this last week. Caris LeVert, minus 2.3. Part of the reason they're playing so well is that he's not playing. Kobe White, minus 2.1. And this I thought was interesting. Two things I thought were interesting here. Kristaps Porzingis, minus 1.9. That is just all the Luka show right now. Carmelo Anthony, minus 1.9. Like, for all the Carmelo Anthony hype, There's nothing to it. Other players you'd recognize or that are interesting that are below minus one, kind of doing the same thing we did the other way. Ricky Rubio, minus 1.7. Mike Conley hasn't played probably since the last time we did this. He's minus 1.8. Corey Joseph in Sacramento, they played a lot of money for, is a minus 1.6. Jason Tatum is a minus 1.5. Interesting. For all the talk of what a great year he's having, it's actually not true. Thaddeus Young, who I feel like might end up on the trade deadline, is a minus 1.4, so maybe stay away a little bit. Jrue Holiday in New Orleans is a minus 1.2. He has a tendency to do this if he doesn't hit his mid-range shot because he takes a lot of them. It's a dangerous way to live. He only goes to the free throw line 5% of the time and takes 24% of his shots as threes. So his shot distribution is not very good. CJ McCollum, minus 1.2. Same story. Only 4% of his possessions go to the free throw line. So that gets a little tough, a little bit of a tough way to live. De'Aaron Fox is a minus 1.0. See what impact he has when he returns. Blake Griffin has not been quite right this year. All right, let's look at the Utah Jazz and then wrap this up. The Utah Jazz players, Rudy 2.7, Boyan 1.4, Royce O'Neal 0.5, George Niang 0.5, Tony Bradley 0.5, Jeff Green minus 0.1, so he's average offensively. Emmanuel Mudiay, minus 0.1, average offensively. That's great. If those guys can stay there, we can get this going. Dante's minus 0.2 in limited time. Ed Davis is a minus 0.3. He was positive last year. Joe Ingles, minus 0.5. Let's see if we can work it back up. Donovan's to a minus 0.6, so he's been working it back up the correct direction. He's taking only 24% of his shots as threes and only 8% of his shots going to the free throw line. I'm going to do a quick search here. And he'll fix this like over time. Like that's kind of the thing. Let's do one quick search. Let's do this. Let's do your three point shots are less than 30% of your possessions. Your free throw line is less than 9% of your possessions. And you're a guard. Do I get a million or do I get like three guys? And then let's do that. Your scoring opportunities are over 15. All right. I've got down to six players. And all of them are negative. That's kind of what I suspected. Dennis Schroeder takes 27% of his shots as threes, goes to the line 6% of the time. Donovan, 24% of his possessions, not shots, possessions, as threes, 9% to the line. Jamal Murray, 26-7, is a minus 0.9. Jrue Holiday, 24-6, is a minus 1.2. Colin Sexton is 18-8, and Caris LeVert. I don't know. I would guess that Kemba, or no, who was it? Well, Jrue Holiday we talked about. Somebody else was in there. Tough way to live. I would guess they take just more threes. So Donovan's actually minus 0.6 is the best of the group, but this is still just a tough way to live. Donovan's 8.8 at the free throw line is nice. If he gets that up to 10, it would be great. But, you know, we've talked about this a lot with Donovan, but it's just every single one of those positive players. Kyrie Irving is positive if you take, and he gets into the group if you add the free throws up to 10. Russell Westbrook is too, and he's deeply negative. All right, that is Locked On Jazz. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll talk with you. Actually, I may not be with you Monday. I'm going to go up, I think, to Jackson, watch my son race, and I don't know if I'll have good enough internet. But I'll take my stuff, and if I do, I'll do a show. Have a great one. Talk to you soon.